Authentic Wellness Radio.
Alrighty, everyone, welcome back to episode number 41 of Authentic Wellness Radio. Could not possibly be any more excited for this show. Firstly, I've got to apologize for my voice. I've been a little bit run down over the last few days and I sound a lot worse than I feel, so bear with me on that one. Secondly, this show is brought to you by The Child Obesity Project. Everything you need to know to help your child get through their obesity and body weight and self-esteem challenges. So if you've got any children out there, you should definitely head over to thechildobesityproject.com and have a look. It's free from October 12th till 19th, I believe. So check that one out. I've got some amazing speakers. But today I'm talking to someone who's absolutely incredible and unbelievably brave. Her name is Kai Hibbard, and she was a, I guess the word I'm going to use is survivor of a show called The Biggest Loser. And I've got her on the line right now, and she's ready to drop some amazing truth bombs for us. So Kai, how are you going?
Good, good.
It's such a nice thing to have someone come out and say all the things that you're about to say, and I'm so excited to hear what you've got to share. And I want to get into your story in just a second there, Kai, but I thought I'd ask you some questions just to set the stage for everyone out there, because these are things that you can't really make up. So, I mean, I don't want to get into, well, your opinion is that this show is bad or anything like that, but let's talk about some things that people can't dispute.
Okay.
So, true or false? A trainer said to a contestant, you're going to die before your kids do on the show.
True.
When I say on the show, I mean behind the scenes. True or false? A trainer texted a contestant and said, we've already picked out a fat person coffin for you.
True.
Wow. A production assistant told a contestant on The Biggest Loser to take up smoking so they wouldn't feel so hungry.
True.
Gotcha. Contestants on The Biggest Loser have had amenorrhea, which means they stop having their periods.
True.
Contestants on The Biggest Loser have urinated blood because they're cutting so much weight so quickly.
True.
Okay. Last one. You did an MMA style or boxing style weight cut where you dehydrated yourself for about 2 weeks and spent 6 hours in a sauna the night before a weigh-in so you could lose 19 pounds.
True.
Wow. This is a dirty show, isn't it, Kai?
It's the fact that it pretends it's about health makes it a dirty show, yes.
That's what, yeah, it's the easiest way to lose weight and end up in a hospital apart from lap band surgery, right?
Yeah. I mean, as far as like starving yourself is considered easy and overtraining.
Absolutely. Now, look, I watched The Biggest Loser on occasion. I watched the first episode of the Australian season a couple of maybe a week ago. And I was watching it thinking, these people are so brave. Getting on TV, taking their shirt off, being so vulnerable about where they're at. Why did you want to go on The Biggest Loser? What compelled you to do that?
I was a moron in my 20s and made really poor decisions, would be the best answer I could give. I had never seen the TV show before I went on it. My roommate at the time was a fitness competitor, and I had gained a lot of weight right after I graduated from college. I was a double major when I was in college, and I was taking like 21 credits a semester, and I worked 3 jobs, including teaching aerobics. And so I was going all day long, and then I wouldn't eat, and then I'd eat at night, like I played defensive line for a pro football team. And so the weight stayed off because I was going all the time, and one of my jobs was teaching aerobics, including like I ran the program, so if one of my instructors didn't show up, I'd have to sub their class. So some days I would end up teaching like 3 hours of aerobics classes, wow, along with like my regular schedule and going to school and all that. Well, I graduated from college. I was lucky enough to score a full ride scholarship to law school, and I had nothing to do except like fuck off for the rest of the summer until I left for school. And so I quit my job, stopped teaching aerobics, and I kept eating as though I still had that same active lifestyle. So I gained a bunch of weight very quickly. And my best friend, my roommate, was like, oh my gosh, they have this show. And she'd only seen the finale. And she was like, they need a female winner. And you've gained a lot of weight. What a cool experience and a fun way to like take weight off. And it just snowballed from there. I sent in a video and ended up being flown out to LA. And then I got there. And by the time that you figure out that like maybe this was not the best decision for my health, you're so far through the looking glass that you're stuck. I understand people like blow me shit all the time. Like, you could have left at any time. Absolutely. Conceivably, I could have left at any time. But when you're surrounded by people that tell you all the time about how lucky you are to be there and how you're going to die at any moment if you go home, you start to believe that shit. Just like when they tell you that drinking a black cup of coffee is a meal, you also start to believe that.
Wow, that's crazy. So describe what it felt like to me, or to all of us listening, to be an overweight person walking into that house. Like, what are you scared of? What are you hoping is going to happen? Where are you at emotionally there?
I think that I luckily had no real expectations from seeing the show. I felt really bad for a couple of people on my season in particular, because my season was the 50 states. They had people from all 50 states. And there was one girl in particular that was like a super, super fan of the show. And when she actually made it onto the ranch later, she was so disillusioned. And just to watch her break down was the saddest thing, because she believed it was this like fairy tale place to make her healthy. And when she actually got there and saw what we were actually doing to lose weight, she couldn't believe it. Personally, I don't know if I'm the right person to ask about like emotional experiences through the whole thing. If you watch the show, you tend to notice that like contestants' personalities sort of morph from the first episode to the finale, almost in a change of personality. And one of the complaints from production is that I didn't, that my shit stays pretty steady. But I also had the added, I guess, benefit maybe of my weight hadn't been steady my whole life. And I luckily came from such a supportive home that, as compared to some contestants, their weight stopped them from doing things. I mean, I was a 200-pound aerobics instructor, so I wasn't your normal contestant.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, going into the house, what kinds of things, I'm sure there was a holding period, just like when you go on Big Brother or anything else like that. And I'm sure you had to sign certain waivers saying like, hey, look, if you fall over and break your leg while you're exercising, that's not our fault. What other kinds?
I signed the most ridiculous contract. Like, it's ridiculous.
What was in there?
I've been told that the contracts aren't the same. I'm not sure. But I know that my contract has basically made it very, very difficult for my publishing agent to get my book picked up, because it says something to the effect of NBC Universal and the production company own my life story in perpetuity. And every attorney I've spoken to is like, that's not going to stand up in court, but it could make your life an ass pain. And then the contract also says things like, they're not required to make sure that I am okay. Yeah. Like you said, like if I break my leg or if my health gets damaged, they're not even required to provide me with, doctors who have proper credentials, is basically what the contract says. But when you sign that, first of all, you're in this mindset that it might be your last chance. I mean, that's pretty much the entire pervasive view in society. If you're overweight whatsoever, you're obviously on the verge of death, but I won't go there right now. But the other thing is, you look at it and you think there's no way, or at least I did, because I can be a bit naive still. I didn't think that human beings would treat other human beings that way. I was just like, ha ha, this is so ridiculous, just to cover their asses. Yeah, no, there's a reason the contract is written that way.
Contracts are crazy things. I work at a gym, and my contract that I've signed says if I die and there's a certain amount of time left on my contract and I have money that I need to pay back on it, my gym becomes the executor of my estate and can do whatever it wants with all my assets to cover its the rent that I owe them.
That is insane.
I know, but yours sounds even more ridiculous. No obligation to provide proper medical help to people who are exercising. No. That's ridiculous.
No. And we had to maintain our own health insurance throughout the filming too. Like I said, my show was, 9 years ago now. So hypothetically, like, I've got my fingers crossed that things have gotten better for future contestants. It's really difficult to know for sure though, because everybody that just appeared is your first part of your contract is even more strict, like for the first year or two. And as you get further away from your show, it gets less strict. So nobody speaks out because they're afraid of being sued. I mean, I was threatened, gosh, at least 3 times. And it's funny because every time it's like, we will sue you for anywhere between 100,000 and a million. Dude, if they can find that, they're welcome to it.
Yeah. Crazy. So what kind of things did you have to give up to be a contestant in The Biggest Loser House from a legal perspective?
I had to, when I was there, I had to relinquish all contact with the outside world for the duration of being on the ranch, except for what was observed by production or on camera. They also, and I'm sure this is illegal, they opened our mail and they censored it. Like our letters from home, they would black things out.
You're not even allowed to do that in war.
Yeah. Super illegal. They did it. They opened our mail and then they blacked sections out because they didn't want us to find out anything dramatic going on at home if they couldn't get it on camera.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Now, I heard a story of someone who had a laptop that they managed or they took into the house and they said the camera light on their laptop would keep turning on and off.
Like I know the contestant that said that, and that is from at least 7 seasons after mine. I never experienced anything like that because I wasn't allowed access to my laptop. My season was so old, like iPhones didn't exist yet. So,
wow.
I wasn't even allowed to have my laptop. They locked all that stuff away.
So it sounds like the way that you're describing it, it sounds like there's a whole community of ex-Biggest Loser contestants or survivors who are just together talking about all this kind of stuff, but no one really wants to take it mainstream. Is that what's happening where we can't see it?
There's a pretty decent percentage of former Biggest Loser contestants that I've talked with, yes, that have had experiences very similar and sometimes even worse than mine. And don't get me wrong, there are some Biggest Losers that absolutely love it. And I've had conversations with them too, but at the same time, like I can think of one particularly in my head that talks about how great of an experience it was for her, but at the same time ate nothing but baby food for a month. So I have to question whether or not they really came out psychologically healthy from the experience. Just like I was saying when we briefly spoke earlier about how another contestant, when I was backing my stance about how unhealthy the program is, because there are some Biggest Losers out there that continue to make their money off the show, their association with the show, and they really hate when I speak out because it puts a damper on their income. And I was having a conversation with one gentleman that's like that. And when I sent him academic peer-reviewed articles backing my stance and scientific evidence showing that what the show does and is unhealthy not only for participants but for viewers, he literally responded with a photograph of himself telling me that was all the science he needs. So, you know, just like any other random demographic population, you've got different perspectives on the experience.
Absolutely. Now, I interviewed a guy called Jonathan Baylor about the calorie myth, which is what they support on The Biggest Loser, which says if you burn more calories than you eat, you'll lose weight. And Jonathan Baylor has done such an amazing job of just completely destroying that ridiculous science. And he makes it so simple that a 5-year-old could read it, close the book, and then say, that's the stupidest idea of trying to lose weight that I've ever heard from anyone. Have you ever read Jonathan Baylor's book?
I haven't, but I will now. And I know from like personal anecdata that what he's saying is true. And I can say that I also saw other contestants on the show go through that because they'd make us wear these heart rate monitors or calorie counters on some days. And, you know, it would insist that you'd burned 8,000 calories that day and then you didn't lose a single pound when you weighed in. And if it were true, then that wouldn't be possible. So on a personal level, I could see where, yeah, that's probably correct. I'll probably go read that book now.
Do it. It's a brilliant book. Now, so they've got you wearing a heart rate monitor, and that's telling you how many calories you're burning at any particular moment.
That was only sporadic on my season. I guess there's all kinds of fancy new sponsors and stuff. Like I know a bunch of former contestants got Fitbits. I guess that's the name of the thing. I don't know, where you wear a bracelet and it's supposed to monitor your stuff. I've been way too far down the road into eating disorder territory to even like gamble with something like that. And I'm also, from what I could get from the contestants that deal with it or have those, you only get it on the seasons that like they're a sponsor. It isn't like there's some particular tool that's completely maintained and used over the course of the seasons. Like for instance, like when eating, talking about calories in, calories out, during my season, the type of food also didn't seem to be paid attention to. Like there was a lot of processed lunch meats eaten. There was a lot of sugar-free Jell-O pudding eaten because they were a sponsor of the show. Laughing Cow cheese, Kraft processed cheese, like stuff that I would never put into my body right now. And a lot of the more recent former Biggest Loser contestants say that that's not the diet that's advocated at all. Like, things have changed so much in 10 years that at least they've moved on to whole foods.
Well, my response to that would be, so you did it in the first place. Aren't you meant to be a show about health?
Right, exactly. I mean, they're like, literally one of my meals would be coffee. I wasn't exaggerating earlier. And I'm trying to think of some of the other things. Oh, I know. I was talking to the spouse, actually, of the gentleman who won my season. And they did a Discovery Health special after his show. And she was just in shock at the intense, vitriol she received afterwards from, fans that just get completely disillusioned when you talk about how unhealthy the show is. They act like you killed Santa Claus in front of them. And she made the statement that when her husband came home from The Biggest Loser, he had a steady diet of, diet soda and processed cheese. And, of course, you can't live that for the rest of your life. And to think that you can is ridiculous. And if that's what you're taught on how to lose weight, what makes you think that you're going to be able to maintain for the rest of your life? Nobody can maintain that. And, you know, that's one of the biggest problems, I think. Oh, there's so many damn problems with this show. But because of the body shaming mentality we have in society, it's really easy with a show like this to pretend that they gave you all these tools to go home and live healthy. And then when you go home and you gain weight back, and by the way, every single one of us gains weight back, especially in the first month, because we're no longer dehydrated and our body's trying to re-regulate itself. Then the show automatically turns around and is like, we gave you all these tools, you just didn't use them. And then the person is like, you're right, it's my fault I gained all this weight back. Like, it's always a blame the victim stance. And I get really annoyed when people are like, well, stop being a victim. There's no shame in being a victim. The definition of being a victim is that somebody treated you poorly. There's no shame in that. You didn't do anything wrong. Somebody treated you poorly. And this show, boy, they've got it locked down, because if you go back and you gain the weight back, and it's obviously your fault because you didn't pay attention. And if you keep the weight off because somebody with actually your health in mind staged intervention, which happened in my case, well, obviously we helped save your life. Like, either way, the show wins. Just like when I speak out about it, if somebody looks at me and they think that I'm fat on that particular day, I get discredited for what I have to say because I'm, quote, fat and bitter and I didn't learn from the show. Or if somebody thinks that I look thin on that particular day or in that particular photo, I get, she's an ungrateful bitch. She should be happy she's so thin now.
Crazy. Yeah. And just on that thing you said about heart rate and burning calories, if I was on that show, I totally would have cheated. I'd just put that heart rate thing on and turn on The Exorcist or Paranormal Activity or something like that. Scare myself for about 5 hours, get my heart rate way up, and I'd just sit on the lounge and just pretend I'd done a massive workout.
Well, the thing is they don't even look at your heart rate monitor to see exactly what you're doing. Like, it's got no basis in it. One of the other major flaws with the show is, to quote unquote win, you just have to lose weight. You don't have to build muscle. You don't have to get cardiovascularly healthy. You just have to lose weight. I could have gone home and done math, and I could have won.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
When you put it like that, that's pretty crazy.
I mean, teeth are heavy, right? Like, wow. Yeah.
So let's talk about your first workout then, Kai. You walk in the house, you don't know what the hell's happening, you feel a little bit vulnerable, and you're made to feel like what you've been doing is bad, and now you're in the zone of the Messiah, and these trainers appear to help you. What did your first workout look like?
I honestly don't remember my first workout. I don't at all. I remember, I remember, I guess the first week of working out, trying to pinpoint my exact first workout. I have no idea. I know that, for the first 3 to 5 weeks of the show, I bled through my shoes. That's how bad my feet were.
Was that from running, or what was that from?
Yep. From running and from walking and from the elliptical and just from the amount of exercise and the shoes that I was in, because I obviously hadn't been fitted for proper athletic shoes. I wasn't an athlete up to that point, really. I mean, other than teaching aerobics, and that's a completely different ball game than running mountains, which is what they had me doing the first week. And I know that a lot of people vomited.
Right.
Yeah, there was lots of vomiting.
That's not good.
So, no.
So what did that feel like? Because, actually, you're probably a bad example of this, because you were already kind of someone who was exercising a bit as an aerobics instructor, but looking around at everyone else, I mean, I remember when I was overweight, I didn't exercise at all. I played lawn bowls as a sport in school, so I didn't have to exercise.
I have no idea what that is, but that's pretty hilarious.
Lawn bowls? You don't know what lawn bowls is?
No.
Okay,
no.
So a whole bunch of old men get on like a golf putting green, but it's a big square, and there's like a white ball down one end, and they roll a ball at it, and whoever can get their ball the closest is the winner, and then you walk over to the other side, and then you keep doing it.
It's like a giant outdoor shuffleboard,
it's like,
sort of?
Yeah, kind of. It's like...
Okay.
It's like ground darts, but with a ball.
Okay, okay. All right.
That was my sport in school.
That was your sport. Well, I, like, despite whatever my weight was, I've always remained fairly active. I mean, like, I was a cheerleader in high school, which is hilarious to most people that meet me. But even I, like, obviously I hadn't maintained my working out in months by the time I got on the show. So, I can remember getting up in the mornings and, like, when you have to like hold on to the rail on the stairs in order to walk up and down, or when you go to urinate, you literally drop onto the toilet because your legs can't support you anymore and you have to pull yourself up. Like at one point, also all of our medications had been confiscated. So we weren't allowed to have any meds, including like Tylenol or Advil or Aleve on us. And
are they painkillers?
Yeah, they're like over the counter, like pain meds, but like ones you can buy at any like gas station here in the States.
Right. So they're like Panadol and Nurofen for us here in Australia.
Yes. Yes. Gotcha. I know what Panadol is. I saw that this summer when I was in Europe. Okay. So, anyway, they'd taken it all away. And at one point, one of the contestants, while we were stopped somewhere traveling, had everybody else distract one of the production assistants, and she bolted into a grocery store and stocked up onto it. And she was kind of like the drug dealer of our show, because people would go to her and like pop as many as you could in the morning because you could barely walk. You couldn't move. I had never, ever experienced delayed onset muscle soreness like that in my life. I couldn't walk.
So if if I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, I imagine that would be like being an NFL linebacker right at the end of his career after he's had a couple of really bad injuries and come back from them, and he's been playing nonstop for 15 years and now his body's just broken down. Is that kind of what it was like?
That's kind of how I feel now, actually, because of all the abuse I put myself through. What it was like was a way to learn that exercise is something awful and horrible that you have to do, is what it was like. And it took the longest time, and I still find myself slipping into it every once in a while, that if my workout doesn't hurt, I have a hard time believing that it counts.
Wow. See, that's dangerous. That's probably dangerous.
Yes, it's incredibly dangerous. Yes.
There are some people in my gym who have that same kind of mindset, and I'm scared when I'm around them because they look like more like a dead person than an alive person. That's a terrifying thing to say.
There was a point during this entire process for me, during the at-home process, where I was literally working out between 5 and 8 hours a day and eating less than 1,000 calories a day.
See, this is the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about. The food side of things, because I used to be a cyclist, and cyclists are silly. We'd go and get on a bike and we'll ride for 6 hours and we'll do it as hard as we possibly can. And then because we're also extremely lazy, we'll go and sit down on a chair or something like that for the rest of the day. There's actually a saying in cycling, and this is how dumb cyclists are. Why walk if you can ride? Why stand if you can sit? And why sit if you can lie down? That's what we say about ourselves. But I remember when I was in France and I was cycling, I would wake up in the morning, there'd be a buffet breakfast, and I'd know I'd have to go and exercise, or not exercise, I'd have to go and race for like 6 or 7 hours, and I would eat and eat and eat and force myself to eat until I felt physically sick, because I knew if I didn't, I would just be a mess by the end of the day. Like, I was eating crap food back then, I couldn't have one bowl of cereal and a couple of eggs and some bacon and expect to ride for 7 hours, that would be ridiculous. So what did it feel like for you to have to work out like an athlete and eat like an 8-year-old?
I didn't know any other way. I can tell you that there was a saying amongst contestants, at least on my season, that the shower's for crying, if that gives you any idea of what it felt like. I can also remember that one night when I was at home, I was woken up from a dead sleep, which sleep was rare, by the way. At one point, I was overtraining so much that I was only getting like 3 hours of sleep at night. I was woken up in the middle of the night because my legs cramped up so badly. I fell out of bed and the pain was so bad I vomited.
From cramps?
Yeah, from cramps, because obviously I wasn't getting the nutrients that I needed to keep maintaining the what I was maintaining.
See, I've vomited from pain before as well, and that's a pretty high level.
It was pretty bad. I'm covered in tattoos. I love them. So to hit a level of pain where I'm throwing up was a pretty decent level of pain. Yeah.
Crazy. So you touched on this earlier. What, let's say you're eating 1,200 or 1,000 or 800 calories a day. What kinds of foods were available to you on the show? Was it like a normal, really healthy, organic type? Okay. So I'm guessing not. Was it like, so it wasn't that, but just restricted. What kinds of foods did they give you?
Well, when my season was airing and going on, organic wasn't really a thing. You have to remember it was like 9 years ago. Not that I'm excusing the foods that they did feed us, but what we ate was basically what was sponsoring the show at the time. I mean, everything based, it was based around money. So there was Jell-O. There was a lot of Jell-O available. There was some Jell-O free pudding. There was some Jenny O, lunch meat. There's a lot of Jennie-O lunch meat laying around, and ground turkey, which isn't so bad, but a lot of fat-free cheese slices. Have you ever seen them? They look more like plastic than they do like cheese. I don't even know what that shit is. We ate a lot of that. A lot of I can't believe it's not butter. I wouldn't eat that today. Like, I couldn't think about putting that in my body. I have a six-year-old kid, and the idea of feeding him something like that, like, it blows my mind that I was eating that stuff. I'm trying to think what else that we had available at the time. The way our meals were set up, and I have no idea if it's the same way now, but we weren't allowed to do our own shopping or anything like that. And even though there's a registered dietitian associated with the show, who, by the way, I've spoken to like personally and afterwards, who apparently is amazing at her job, and had contact with the 36 people at home who were part of my season and my show. When she went to give us any advice or tell us anything about food, production would intervene and tell us that we weren't to listen and that we were to listen to our trainers. So I never really got to interact with her or find out what foods that she recommended. We had to cook our foods in this beautiful, beautiful kitchen on the ranch that we stayed on, but we'd make grocery lists, and our trainers had to approve them. And I'm pretty sure that the trainers on my two season didn't have any, or the two trainers on my season, excuse me, have any dietary or nutritional education in their backgrounds at all. I mean,
I'll tell you right now, I've worked with dozens and dozens, probably close to 100 personal trainers. And as far as I'm aware, I know two others who have done any work into the nutrition
side of things. Yeah, exactly. And that's the same thing for the trainers associated with the show. They're not hired for their educational background. I'll put it that way.
Mm. But they all talk about it. Everyone's an expert when they're a personal trainer. So let's actually talk about the trainers. What were they like? Were they there to make TV or were they there to help people lose weight?
They're there to be famous. I mean,
that's such a good answer.
Yeah, they're there to be famous.
So what are they, I mean, what's your interaction with them like? Because I've never watched an episode of American Biggest Loser, but I know in Australia, these trainers are called the best in Australia and they make huge amounts of money and whatnot. When they're interacting with you, do they actually care about you or are you just kind of a number and someone who they've got to take a certain amount of weight off?
Well, I had on my season a woman named Kim Lyons. I'm sure you've heard of Jillian Michaels.
Yeah.
She wasn't on my season. So I have no personal interaction with her. I can't speak about her. I had Bob Harper and Kim Lyons on my season. I will say that Kim originally seemed like she gave a shit about the health of the contestants. My other impression of Kim is that I've met rocks that are more educated than Kim, but she sure was pretty. And she got caught up in a lot of the bullshit of filming a show. For instance, she originally started off with our team with this whole mentality of like, I'm not going to have you guys dehydrate. you're going to, you know, go about this. Like, it's just going to be weight loss. You're not going to do that. And then she had the other trainer on my season, Bob, agree to the same thing. And as soon as the first weigh-in came, he started to dehydrate his team. And she was like, all right. So, I believe that they believe they care about the contestants. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much money do they earn?
Oh, I can't even begin to imagine. I have no idea. They're both worth millions, I'm sure. I mean, they have multiple videos out and endorsement deals. And for instance, Bob is now the host of the show starting this season. So it's amounts of money that I couldn't possibly imagine. Like, the grand prize of $250,000 is pretty much a pittance to either of the trainers on that show. It makes sick money. I mean, the diet and weight loss industry makes a fortune. So, you know, I always thought if I had no conscience and no scruples whatsoever, I'd either start a cult or I'd become a diet guru.
Hmm. Now, listen, I've been a personal trainer for a while now, about a quarter of my life. I spent about the first or the middle half in school, and then the first quarter kind of just doing not much, watching TV and stuff. And I believe that, and I really feel strongly about this, if you're a personal trainer and you don't go and educate yourself every single year as often as you possibly can and work really hard on becoming a better trainer, then you're doing the job that I love more than just about anything else a massive disservice. And I hope no one ever pays you money to do personal training. And I hope that eventually you end up falling out of the industry because you're not a good trainer unless you go and constantly educate yourself. Like, people are coming to you with problems and they have issues and, you know, they're emotional beings and they want your help. And it's your job to do as good a job for them as you possibly can every single time. That's our commitment as trainers. Now, do these trainers on those shows like The Biggest Loser actually go and study and work and think about how to improve their service that they're providing to people? Or is it just, I'm a personal trainer and I'm just going to keep doing the same stuff over and over and over again?
I have absolutely no idea on what their continuing education habits look like. I will say that I did an interview once where I talked with a journalist about the unhealthy practices of the show. And Jillian Michaels was also interviewed for the same article. And one of the statements she made was, I obviously would not put these people through workouts like this in the real world, but this is TV. So what that says to me is if she is continuing her education, she's completely disregarding it, because just by having a television camera in the same room as you doesn't make it not the real world anymore. That 500-pound person in front of you is still really a human being. So I would have to question whether or not they're actually continuing their education.
You know what I saw in the newspaper last year? One of the trainers here in Australia opened up I shouldn't say she, because there is only one. Anyway, she collaborated with a big pharmacy chemist type chain across Australia, and she made these range of vitamins. And she said in the newspaper, "This has been my dream since I was a child." And I thought, no, it hasn't. That's not
nobody dreams of, I can't wait to make vitamins when I get older. That's, yeah, no.
Yeah. So is it literally just all about the money for these people?
I can't begin to guess what their motivations are. I would say that their actions definitely support that hypothesis. Yes.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, when it comes to things like The Biggest Loser and CrossFit, kind of you can put that one in a similar category, or P90X or whatever come about, and there's huge controversy about them. Some people say, well, you know what? A rising tide lifts all boats. So if there's people out there talking about getting healthier, then yay, that makes everyone in the health industry more successful and does good things for the world. Do you agree with that when it comes to The Biggest Loser?
No, I don't. There's so much scientific evidence that shows how detrimental that show is for viewers and participants that there's no way I could support that, like, an ends justifies the means mentality about that show. I can't. No.
So let's say you can wave a magic wand and you own a TV show about weight loss, and it's called The Kai Hibbard Show. And 25 overweight people come on your show, and you've got a guaranteed listener or viewer base of 1 million people. And these people are vulnerable. They're terrified. They're upset about their weight. They're concerned about where their life's going, and they want you to help them. What would you do with those contestants?
The first thing I would do is not make it about weight loss. And then the second thing I would do is take it off TV. And both of those things are absolutely detrimental to getting healthy. When you focus on weight loss as opposed to eating to nourish your body and exercising to take care of your body, and putting anybody who's in an emotionally vulnerable position on a TV program is exploitation, pure and simple. I wouldn't do either of those things. There's so many things that we haven't even touched on that are tied into the fake fame of reality TV that compound the issues of weight loss in a public venue. I don't know, I have a conscience, so I wouldn't do either of those things.
So what would it look like if you could go and say to someone, instead of waking up at 5 a.m. and exercising for 8 or 9 hours and hardly eating anything, what kind of strategy or routine would you give them to use to lose weight? Remembering that most people out there who are listening to this have jobs and kids and don't have a spare 8 hours in their day to spend exercising.
God, and who would want to? I think I would have two pieces of advice. My first one would be to throw away your scale. It's absolutely the worst measure of health ever. Your weight is the worst measure of your health. My second piece of advice, obviously after talking to your doctor, because there are labs out there that test your metabolic health far better than your weight does, would be to like yourself as you are right now. It's really, really hard to take care of, like, the best analogy I can give is if you live in a home and that house, like, you hate the color of that house and it just makes you angry every day you come home, and the only reason you hate that color of that house is because the entire world tells you you should, you're not going to want to take care of that house. You're pissed off at it. You don't want anything to do with it. And if you can talk to yourself and realize that your hatred for what you have comes from outside voices and not your internal one, when you start to like that house and you start to like your body, you want to nourish it. You want to feed it good things. You want to exercise for fun. It feels good to move your body for fun. It doesn't feel good to exercise for 8 hours without giving yourself any fuel. It's torture. There's this crazy mindset where, you know, self-deprivation and punishment are somehow rewarded. I don't know if you've got that same mentality in Australia, but it's a huge thing here. Like you pointed out with like CrossFit and P90X and that whole, like, you know, the more it hurts, the better it is for you. That's bullshit. The more it hurts, the more it hurts. Find stuff you enjoy. And that way you'll do it for the rest of your life, because that's what it should be.
Wow. You're amazing, Kai. I've loved every second of this, to be honest.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm stoked.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Now you need to go and write a book about this, or you have written a book about this. Is that right? But you just can't get it published.
Yeah, I've got actually two in the works, and so we'll see what's going. There's one that is a fiction book about a hypothetical fat girl who goes on reality TV, and then there is another book about my personal experiences, my whole life, and my recovery from everything that I've put my body through. So hopefully next year, look out for those.
You'll have to let me know when those come out, because I'm definitely going to read the made-up one and the real one.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me, Kai. It's been an absolute pleasure.
The pleasure's all mine. Authentic Wellness Radio.